talks come together in different ways. Sometimes you get a good title, and for the love of you, you can't figure out what to do after that. Sometimes you get a good body, and for the love of you, you can't figure out what to call it. Today, I don't know whether I've got the good body. You'll be the judges of that, but I've got a plethora of titles. One of them I put in the bulletin. Beware our falling shorts. That came to me a few months ago as I was skimming an article and a southern preacher was preaching on Romans chapter 3 where it says we've all sinned and come short of the glory of God. And he ended his sermon by saying, Lord, forgive us of our falling shorts. And it caught my eye. I was recently reading from Romans chapter 7, where Paul says, I want to do this, but I do that. And I wondered, what was Paul really saying to himself? What was Peter saying to himself when the cock crowed? Well, if I'd have been them, I know what I'd have said. I would have said to myself, stupid, stupid, stupid. Horse racing is very popular in Kentucky and very, very competitive. There were two owners of two steeplechase horses, and they battled back and forth. One of them, finally deciding, trying to get the edge, hired a professional jockey to ride in the race. And these two horses were neck and neck throughout the competition. And as luck would have it, they both fell at the last steeple, or the last hurdle. Both jockeys scrambled to get up. The professional jockey got up first and jumped on the horse and dashed to the finish line, and he won. He went back to the stables expecting to see a joyous owner that was really thrilled that he had hired this man to do it. But the owner wasn't happy at all. The owner was fuming, stomping. The jockey said, why are you upset? Didn't I win? He said, yeah, you won, but you got on the wrong horse. Now that jockey had the best of intentions, didn't he? He was intent on winning. But he'd become disoriented. He'd become distracted. He'd made a mistake and he ultimately failed, didn't he? You know, sometimes that's exactly where you and I find ourselves. We start strong, best of intentions, excited, confident. We want to succeed in the faith in our walk for the Lord. We're going to be a loyal follower of Jesus. And then we get distracted. We fall. We allow wrong influences to come in. We experience a setback. We make a bad decision. Maybe nobody else knows about that bad decision. But sin creeps into our lives. Our relationship with Christ suffers. And we look at ourselves and we think, stupid, stupid, stupid. How could I get myself in this predicament? You know, probably the first natural inclination when we find ourselves in that is to hide it. Because one of the things man wants to do most about sin is to hide it. Adam and Eve, on throughout, it's hide it. But that won't work, will it? Because sin that is hidden simply continues to fester, continues to grow, continues to infect. During a church meeting one time, an old brother stood up to testify about his faith. And yet his testimony surprised the audience that night. He stood up and he looked around at his brothers and sisters and he said, I'm a member of this small, not terribly exciting congregation. I've not been ordained. I've never gone to seminary. I've had one failed marriage. I'm on my second. On any given day, I'm capable of being a jerk with my wife and my family. I'm terminally insecure, which causes me to compensate with bouts of arrogance. At times, people irritate me and I hide from them. I'm impulsive, what causes me to say things I shouldn't and make promises I can't keep. I'm inconsistent, he said. My walk with Christ is stuttering, stumbling, bumbling. My attempts to follow Him are not very fruitful. At times, the Lord's presence is so real I can't stop the tears, and then without warning, I can't find Him. Some days my faith is so strong, impenetrable, and immovable, and some days my faith is so weak, pathetic, helpless, and knocked out like a paper cup floating on the ocean in the middle of a hurricane. I've been a Christian for 45 years. I'm familiar with all of the vocabulary of faith, and I'm often asked to give advice about matters of doctrine. But I'm still a mess. I'm light years away from being able to say with Paul, imitate me. I'm 56 years old and I'm still struggling. I'm flawed, I'm clumsy, I'm unstable. I'm a bona fide failure. End quote. Ever felt like you let somebody down? Ever felt like you just wanted to scream out what this man articulated on that evening? Ever tell yourself, I'm not going to disappoint anybody? And then you do. Tell yourself, I'm not going to let the Lord down. Then you let Him down. You know, to disappoint someone that we love hurts. But to disappoint the one who laid down his life for us is pain beyond belief. Well, that old brother wasn't named Peter. But I suspect that must have been how Peter felt after he denied Christ three times and he heard the cock crow. We're told that Peter went out and wept bitterly, but I suspect in whatever language Peter was speaking, he said something like, stupid, stupid, stupid. Why did I do that? How could I do that? And he felt like a bona fide failure. Just like you and I do sometimes when we let the Lord down. Maybe to help us put ourselves in Peter's shoes just a little bit, think of yourself in this position. A friend of yours is charged with a crime, and you could give that person an alibi. You know where they were, and you know they didn't do it. But to do that, you would have to give up some circumstances of where you were at or what you were doing that would be embarrassing to you. So you remain silent. The friend goes to jail. After several years, your friend is released from jail. Now, how would you feel? Would you be glad they're out of jail? Maybe. But would you wonder about your relationship with them from that point on? I think that must have been a little bit of how Peter felt. I asked Jim to read those two seemingly separated readings because the one was where Peter let the Lord down. The second one was the next encounter that they had. And Jesus comes to Peter in John chapter 21 with that famous trilogy of, do you love me? Yes, the agape filial exchange that I hope you're familiar with. But I'd like for us to try to imagine what was pouring in Peter's mind at that time. I just denied him not long ago. How is he going to react to me? You know, Simon Peter is such a wonderful person for us to study because he's a man of success and he's a man of failure. He's a man of broken promises and he's a man of kept promises. But I'd just like for you to think for just a moment this morning about the similarities between the denial of Christ and the similarities between what we find in John chapter 21. In John chapter 21, beginning with verse 1, it says, "Afterward Jesus appeared again to his disciples by the Sea of Galilee, and it happened this way, Simon Peter, Thomas, Nathanael," they say, "we're going to go out to fish." You remember the first time Jesus called Peter? What was Peter doing? Fishing. What's he doing now? Fishing. How many times did Peter deny Christ? Three times. How many times did Jesus say, "Do you love me?" Three times. There's a wonderful analysis here of Jesus masterfully bringing this person back. And I guess that's what I want to deal with. We all fail. We all have falling shorts. We all have moments when the only words that really can come to our head are stupid, stupid, stupid. That's not the issue. The issue is, now what do we do? There is an interesting little sidelight, and I just found this very curious. There's a word in the Greek that occurs twice. It's anthrakia. It occurs twice in the New Testament. You know when it occurs? It occurs, one, when Peter denies Jesus. Anthrakian is the word for a hot coal. Remember Peter was standing around a fire with people when they say, "Aren't you the one that knows him?" And then he denies him. It's used there, and it's used again here in John chapter 21 when they're again around a fireplace and Jesus comes to Peter. Accident? Probably not. And after this meal together in John chapter 21, Jesus turns to Peter, and in full view of the other disciples, he confronts him. And I suspect Peter was full of doubts as to where he stood with Jesus. I would be. And I imagine Peter might have been expecting Jesus to say something like, "Why did you deny me? Why did you let me down?" That would have been what I would have put in the script, but Jesus doesn't do that, does he? No. He says, "Peter, do you love me? Peter, do you love me?" I think Jesus was too compassionate to stick the sword of guilt right into Peter's heart and possibly undo him emotionally and spiritually. But he had to perform some rather delicate surgery, didn't he? Jesus was interacting with Peter in John chapter 21 to see where Peter was spiritually. And I think they had a rather honest exchange. Jesus says, "Do you agape me?" And Peter couldn't say that. He said, "No, I filio you." Peter, I think, was saying, "Lord, I'm not there yet. I want to be there, but I'm not there yet." I don't want to put words into his mouth, but I suspect his thinking was along the lines, "Lord, if I was to agape yet, I wouldn't have denied you. I'm not there yet." Ever felt like that? I want to be there, I'm just not there yet. And I let myself down. I let my family down. I let the church down. I let the Lord down. Well, I think one of the keys to dealing with this is, first of all, to be able to be honest. That's a very difficult thing. Not honest in the sense that we don't overtly lie. I hope at least we're past that, or at least we don't have to talk about the wrongness of that. But being honest as to where we are spiritually. So when a brother or sister says, "How are you doing spiritually?" we don't just glibly say "fine" when we're not fine, when we're hurting, when we're stumbling. You know, honesty about the strength and health of a relationship is important. We've had several good sessions in the family series about being honest with one another. Now, honesty doesn't avert tactfulness, but it does get past the superficial. And sometimes our responses are just fine when they're not. A Christian arrives for church on Sunday morning with all of his faithful brothers and sisters. And someone asks you, and these words are different words, how are you doing spiritually? How is it with your soul? And we say, fine. We sang 561. It seems to be a favorite of many congregations. It is well with my soul. That's a wonderful sentiment as long as we can sing it truthfully. But things aren't always well with our souls. I guess one of the things I'd like for us to ask ourselves this morning is, how is it with your soul this morning? Now don't pretend your relationship with the Lord is fine if it's not, because it'll never get fixed if we do that. It's okay to admit that it's not what it ought to be. That's the crucial step in fixing it. The church is not a pretty place for fine people. It's a place where hurting people need grace and assistance. And we come together to help one another, to help each other grow, don't we? I think when the Lord came to Peter in John chapter 21 and they had that trifecta exchange, I really don't think Jesus was upset so much with Peter when Peter didn't say, I agape you. I think the Lord was trying to get Peter to understand where he was so they could then roll up their sleeves and the Lord could say something like, okay, now that we know where you're at, let's work together to fix it. Let's work together to fix it. In Romans chapter 3, verse 23, it says, for all have sinned and come short of the glory of God. You know, Americans have little patience with losers. We love winners. We canonize champions. We adore achievers. I don't think I've ever met anyone who admitted that their goal was to fail. Now, after we fail, we rationalize it, but I don't know that there are many people, if any, whose real goal in life is to fail. Failure is the one thing we don't want to be labeled. And fear of failure is one of the things that paralyzes us quicker than anything else. It causes us to be indecisive. But I want to look for just a few moments this morning at some of the things the Lord says about failure. Number one, the Lord tells us everybody fails. James chapter 3, verse 2. In many ways, we offend all. The NIV says we all stumble in many ways. Solomon in the Old Testament, in Ecclesiastes 7 and 20 says, there is not a just person upon earth that does good and sins not. Another translation, there is no one on earth who does what is right all of the time and never makes a mistake. Superstars fail. Men make millions of dollars a year for shooting a basketball through a hoop and miss over 50% of the time. Everybody fails. Now, having said that, we dare not use that in one iota as an excuse. And Paul talks to us about that in Romans 6. Shall we sin that grace shall abound? For us to say, well, everybody sins and I can't help it, that is not the attitude we want to take. But I do want us to understand that when we stumble, that's not nearly as important as what we do with the stumble. When I look at men like Peter and Judas Iscariot, which one of those was the worst? Was it worse to deny Christ three times or to betray him? I don't know how to pick. But what was so strikingly different is in the reaction of those two men to their failures. You know, the difference between successful and unsuccessful people, successful and unsuccessful Christians, is not that the successful Christian never fails, but how they react when they do it and what they do in the following moment. Successful people always simply get up and keep on going. And a Christian simply gets up and he keeps on going. That's what Peter did. And that's what contrasts him, in my mind, to Judas. Always remember Failure is temporary. Giving up is what makes it permanent. That's one of those, I wish I'd have said that. I mean, I did say it, but I wish I'd have said it first. I'm going to repeat it because that's so right. Failure is temporary. It's giving up that makes it permanent. Successful people for God are the persistent. They're the determined. Dare I say the stubborn in their pursuit of God. I think Paul understood that quite well, and that's why in 2 Corinthians chapter 4 in verses 8 and 9 he says, "We are troubled on every side, yet not distressed. We are perplexed, but we're not in despair. We're persecuted, but we're not forsaken. We're cast down, but we're not destroyed." Paul is saying we have failed, we've had hardships, but it's not going to cause us to ultimately fail because I am not going to give up. Phillips' translation of that, or paraphrases that, simply says, "We might be knocked down, but we're never knocked out." I think that's a good thing for a Christian to keep in mind. Successful people, successful Christians are simply ordinary people with extraordinary determination. Now, resilience does not automatically equal righteousness, but resilience in the Lord's way does. We have to be resilient in the right thing. And I believe the Bible teaches us there are a lot of benefits in failing. Not to the extent that we ought to go out and see how much we can fail, but that we can use those failures when they occur. I don't know if these numbers are exact, but I think the premise is appropriate. Thomas Edison tried 10,000 times before he finally got the light bulb right. And someone asked him about that, and he said, "You know, I didn't fail 9,999 times." He said, "I just found out 9,999 ways it won't work. And I finally got it right." George Washington lost 2/3 of his battles. R.P. Macy's, who founded the Macy's store, went bankrupt 7 times before he finally hit a successful combination. What differentiated those people from a lot of us? Persistence. They just weren't going to give up. Why are some of you here this morning and others aren't? I'm here to probably propose to you that in many cases it's just persistence, determination. And I salute it. I salute it. We're told in Psalms 119 and 71 that God can educate us through our failures. We're told that God can use our failures to motivate us. You know, most people don't change when they see the light. They only change when they feel the heat. Romans chapter 5, verses 3 and 4 talk about how failure can cultivate us and make our character grow. Maybe I'm more sensitive to this, and I was talking to some people last night about this, just in passing. But I can think of several brothers and sisters in the church, I wasn't particularly thinking about any of you when I made this comment, who I can see that they're performance and service for the Lord is better than it was 5 or 6 years ago, and I personally trace that to some humbling experiences they've had in their lives. And their appropriate response to it. I'd like to kind of conclude by considering just a couple of points. No matter how much of your past has been a failure spiritually, known or unknown, Jesus stands right here today to take you back and forgive you. Some of the best servants for the Lord started out as some of the worst sinners, didn't they? But God washed them. God restored them. He was in the business thousands of years ago, and he's still in the washing and restoring business today. But if you are going to be restored, you've got to be honest about where you're at. And in an audience this size, it's likely there's some here today that aren't fine spiritually. That aren't fine. Maybe you lack commitment. Whatever, the first thing we've got to do is to admit that we're not fine and then proceed forward. And then we've got to be prepared that once we're honest with God, He's going to be honest with us. Is it well with your soul? Honestly. How are you doing? If you have moments in your life when all you can do is shake your head and say, stupid, 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 welcome to the club. Of all the words I say to myself, that one is probably the one I say the most often. Times when I look and I say, now why in the world did I do that or didn't do it? Stupid, stupid, stupid. Well, I suspect as Peter went out and wept bitterly, he was probably thinking those words in the Greek, whatever that is. But let's also focus on his response. Jesus came to him and Peter responded. While there's no joy in being stupid, there's no shame in being stupid. The shame is in remaining stupid. While there's no joy in sin, the real shame of sin is remaining in sin and not taking advantage of what the Lord has given us. We're going to close our thoughts this morning and extend the gospel invitation. You know, it's incidents like we find with Peter and Jesus that keep us from having to worry about how is Jesus going to react when we let him down. Because the Bible tells us he'll be hurt, he'll be saddened. But I think the image we want to have in our minds the most is he's got his arms outstretched and he's saying, come. Come unto me, all ye that labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Come. If we can help anybody in any way this morning, restoring their relationship, renewing their relationship, whatever terminology you want to use, Jesus is saying, just like he did to Peter, come. Let's work this out. Let's get back on the right track. If we can help anybody in any way, we invite you to come as we stand and as we sing.